Hare Krishna. Very happy to see all of you again after a long time. I recited the pranam mantras to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Of course, we can do and should do any time, any place, all the time and in every place. But I specifically did so because I thought I'd tell you something about my ongoing writing project on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because everyone's asking me. So I thought I'd tell you all here, and then I won't have to say individually to everyone, and at the same time I can get some opportunity to praise him more. Well, every time I come I say it's almost finished, this book, but it seems like now this summer I should have it published. This research seems to be going on endlessly. I thought there wasn't very much information, but I found there's so much actually. Last summer, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, maybe you don't know him, he's one of the big leaders of our movement, he asked me, how is this book going on? I said, I just have a little more research to do. He laughed. He's a PhD. He knows about research, all these things. So he laughed and said, famous last words. Because research means there's no end to it. But anyway, this book should be published fairly soon. You'll please all pray to Krishna that I can perform or complete this service. We can't complete service, but there are various services never complete, but there are different phases that we can go through. So this glorification of our acharyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself said, parampara jano bhalomate, we should know very well what is parampara. And especially in studying, of course we shouldn't say even, we have to be very careful what we say. He himself was very particular about that, how we speak, what we say, the usage of words, just like we don't say, our Guru Maharaj is sick. We can say that, but the Vaishnav way of saying it is that he is showing the pastime of sickness, which sounds like a roundabout way of saying it, but it helps us to remember that we should consider that a Vaishnav is not an ordinary person under the control of the three modes of material nature. And that if a Vaishnav appears to be sick, we say it's the pastime, because everything he does is under the control of Krishna's Lila Shakti. So that's, as Prabhupada explained, that this is simply giving, the Lila Shakti is arranging to give the disciple some opportunity to serve like this. So I was saying studying Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but then I withdrew the thought, because we can't think we're studying, like some people study butterflies and some people study modern history. And the acharyas, like Krishna, they're not subjects of our study, but they are the objects of our worship. So we can, just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that one can worship me by reciting this Bhagavad Gita. So we can worship our acharyas by praising their glories, repeating what they have taught. The world should know about this. Our own devotees should know, and the people of the world should know what great personalities have come. People don't know who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is Srila Prabhupada. People don't know. So even if they know, people can't appreciate. Here in Dubai, a few years ago, I gave someone a copy of this book I'd made on Srila Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj. And the person who received it, he asked, well, what did he do? What did he write? What did he do? He'd written a book about something. What did he do? Well, he loved Krishna. What did he do? People think that you have to build big buildings, and in Dubai, I saw as I came in, they want to build the world's, what is it, tallest, what else? There were three things: tallest, biggest, anyway, they want to make the most, it's the most ist of everything. So, but what's the use? We can build a nice temple for Krishna. But even Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj, he didn't do that. So what did he do? He didn't do anything material. He didn't know whether it was day or night. I mean, for him it didn't make any difference, because he just did whatever he was doing, which was living with Krishna. He wasn't connected with this world. But people think you have to do something. Even in the spiritual field, Satsarup Maharaj, I quoted this morning in a class in Bombay, in Juhu. This often comes to my mind. Satsarup Maharaj made a very nice comment that Prabhupada was wandering the streets of New York in 1966 with no unknown, no one cared for him. And Satsarup Maharaj made the comment that even if the Krishna consciousness movement hadn't developed, still Prabhupada was, his mission was successful, because his mission was to serve his Guru Maharaj. And that was, he was doing that. So Prabhupada, it wasn't that Prabhupada became more perfect after the movement spread. He was always perfect. So anyway, this, if we can praise our acharyas, that will be very, if we can understand, try to understand by their mercy what their qualities are, serve their mission, that will be very helpful for our advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, I'm saying this. So anyway, that book will be out. You please pray for that. I hope that it can be laid out at least by the summer, and then by, maybe by Janmashtami it can be printed. So I'm saying we should serve our acharyas. And actually this program was arranged for Govinda Maharaj, but I just kind of landed on top of it. So, so I'm going to be here for a few more days, and I think I should stop my blubbering over here.
But you were going to say something about Srila Bhaktivedanta. Tell us something.
I said something.
Yeah, but some nectar from the book.
Nectar from the book.
Who wants to hear nectar from the book?
All right, I'll tell you one or two anecdotes. All right, okay, one or two anecdotes. In Bengal at that time, even up to presently, in East Bengal especially, who's from Bangladesh? Which part? Borishal, Dhaka, Dinajpur, Rongpur. Or Apni? Brahmanbaria. So not so much in those areas, but in south. And then mostly the travel is by river. Nadi Matrik Desh. People travel by river. So he was going. That time there was no road. There was very common travel from Golando to Narayanganj by steamer. And there was one man, he would go with a party, and one man was coming who was interested, and he was becoming a devotee and becoming attracted to his teachings. So he was asking many questions to Srila Saraswati Thakur, and he said, well, it seems there's a lot of difference between yourself and your Guru Maharaj. Your whole way of life and your whole approach and everything seems completely different. He was a Bhajanandi and you're a Goshtianandi, and he was just sitting in one place and you're running around all over the place. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself said, I'm running from... He went up as far as Badrinath and down as far as Kanyakumari. And then in the east, I don't know how far, he went at least as far as Dhaka in East Bengal. And in the west, he went way out to Peshawar, which was in that, it was all part of British India at that time. Multan, Lahore, he went to all these places. So he traveled very widely. So this man, he said, "See, there's a lot of difference between you and your Guru Maharaj." And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati replied rather excitedly, "There's no difference." And he pointed at the steamer. They were going by this big steamer. The engine is all the different parts are moving. He said, "You see all these different parts of the steamer? They're all moving very frantically. But behind it all is the battery. The battery doesn't move at all. And it's completely quiet and you don't even see it. But if it wasn't for the battery, then all the other parts couldn't move. So in the same way, my Guru Maharaj, he was sitting in one place and just chanting. But everything that I'm doing, I'm simply getting power from him. I'm not doing anything. He's the power behind everything. There's no difference between him and me. There's no difference in outlook." So there are so many. There's one, this is fairly well known story. It's been printed before. This story I don't think has been printed in any language before. There's one Shambhu Babu who he married for the second time after his first wife died. And he spent all his dowry money on... the lady is going to love this one. He spent all his dowry money on religious books. And then he went to Navadvip and asked Gorki Shodas Babaji Maharaj that, "How can I lead a good family life in Krishna consciousness?" So he said that, "Well, your wife is a devotee, so you can't accept any service from a devotee. You have to serve devotees. So you cook all the meal and you serve her and you do all these things, and then you're going to have a very happy family life." So he wasn't very pleased with that. So he crossed over the river to Mayapur and went to see Siddhanta Saraswati, his disciple, who said, if Babaji Maharaj told this, then you should follow. And then he described how materialistic family or any idea of enjoying oneself in family life is just completely destroys bhakti. So he went for the blessings of the acharyas, but he got in a way which wasn't, he didn't want those kind of blessings. So there's two. Anyway, I want to hear from you.
Do you want to say on the mic? I wanted to ask Maharaj if he knew any elaboration on that point that we hear that Srila Prabhupada spoke about. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta spoke on the first verse of the Bhagavatam for 3 months in Dhaka.
It was 1 month, 30 explanations. He spoke in a temple. It wasn't Gaudiya Math temple. They didn't have at that time. And his lectures were usually minimum 2 hours. And often he spoke for 4 hours, 5 hours. And people in those days, they had time and their minds weren't distracted. They didn't have TV and they didn't have frantic office schedules and projects and goals and all this kind of thing. People had time and interest to sit and listen, and often even just informally someone would come and he would just spend all day talking to them. He said that he wrote in this Upadeshamrita at the end that Hridaya Balila Keba Dayata Dashera Shiva Gopidanna Katha Kirtan. Someone said in my heart that the service of Dayata, that means his name is Rishabhanu Dayata Das, the servant of the lover of Radharani, that your service is to speak about Gopidan, which means, what does that mean? Gopidan? Krishna is the... And Gopidan, there's another, but you know, Thakur gave this meaning, Gopidan, Gopi Parana Dana. You all know that song. But he gave another meaning in another song, Swarasikhi Siddhi, Braja Gopidan, that the wealth of the Braja Gopis is their inherent serving mood, there which is full of rasa. So there's so many things. What was the question about his speech in Dhaka? So yeah, 2 hours, and he explained in 30 ways, and it was his, he would speak and he didn't, we know our own Srila Prabhupada, he often said the same points over and over again, he emphasized again and again to hammer it in to our heads. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's speaking was characterized by just new, all kinds of new realizations and ideas would come flowing out all the time, and he knew like maybe millions of verses. So it was quite remarkable. But unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any record of that retained. Maybe because that was quite early in his preaching career. Later, some of his disciples, they'd jot down the notes, and then afterwards they'd fluff it out again, because fluff it out means they'd take little notes and then they'd write it out as an essay, and then they'd bring it to him and he might add a little more, and then they'd publish it. And they had thousands and thousands of pages. But when he passed away, because they couldn't keep up with it, you know, it's a big job to transcribe and then write out the essay again, so they had thousands of pages, more than the Mahabharata, of notes of his essays, which are all, mostly all lost. Whatever wasn't published, it was all lost. Apparently it was deliberately sabotaged. That's another story. There's so many stories. So many things. Deliberately sabotaged means after his passing away, one of his main disciples who had done so much to serve the mission in writing all these things, it is said, well, it's well known that he went away from the line of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But it seems that it's said that he destroyed so much of this. Sundarananda, it's said. Others say it was just lost, but it's difficult to understand that so much could just get lost. Even his biography, it was partially published, and another part was ready to be published after his passing away. All his early life, which he personally spoke, gave so much information, gone. If Krishna wills, it might be revealed again, but it seems to be lost forever. So many valuable things. One very important point we should all understand, though, is that there's no difference between Bhakti Siddhanta and Bhakti Vedanta. Two words are synonymous. And Prabhupada gave us everything. So, in that sense, when we're not losing. Krishna is unlimited, and the devotees, they experience unlimited bliss in serving Krishna at every moment, and some drops from that ocean of bliss they leave in the world in the form of their writings. But we can't no one can capture it all. Even Ananta Shesh himself can't capture it all. So if we just read Bhagavad Gita as it is, that we can become completely perfect just by that. But then you can also read Srimad Bhagavatam, you can also read Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's unlimited literature about Krishna. So Prabhupada gave us everything, and still there's unlimitedly more. But we can get everything through his books. But I was just thinking about Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that's another thing. about bathing in Radha Kund, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that Radha Kund, that you bathe in there by taking a bath in Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu. You can understand? Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu, it means the ocean of the nectar of Bhakti Ras. And that is the book, the handbook by Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. So he said we should bathe our consciousness in this book. By this we can enter the service of Radha Kund. Very, very elevated topics, no doubt. So, please.
I have another question. I heard a story one time, but I don't know if it's bona fide, about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta before he started the Gaudiya Mutt. Mm-hmm. He was staying in Mayapur and he was doing some tremendous vow of japa chanting.
Yeah, that's well known.
And then Srila Bhaktivinoda sent some advocate down to Mayapur to speak to Bhaktisiddhanta about establishing a mission. Do you know anything about
that? No, I'm not aware of that.
But when he was there doing this, and like the numbers and everything, because I've always heard the story, but I never heard like an exact number of some vow that he had taken for chanting Harinam.
Oh, it's well known. Shatakoti Nam Jap Jagga. Shatakoti means a billion.
A what?
A billion names.
In what period of time?
It took him a little bit over 9 years. Three lakhs a name. 3 lakhs a day.
Three,
like Haridas Thakur.
Three times 64 rounds every day.
Yeah.
And they say he was just living in a hut at that time.
Yeah.
With all the tigers and everything around.
Tigers, I didn't hear about. As far as I know, it wasn't forested land, it was agricultural land.
Really?
Yeah. But tigers were common in throughout most of India at that time.
Srila Jayapataka Swami told me that when he first went to Mayapur, there were still tigers being spotted in the area.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. So there must have been at that time also. Even a few years ago, I saw when we were going around Navadvip Dham, these Adivasis, as they're called, although the real Adivasis of India are the Rishis and the But I saw them, they're naked with bows and arrows, they're going around hunting. Still in Mayapur area, which is surprising because they're mostly in the jungles and there's no jungle around Mayapur now. So that was common though, tigers. There was a lot more forest and there are a lot more tigers.
So
all over India.
What was the nature of this? Is there any documentation of the nature of his life at that time? Was anyone staying with him? Or?
Yeah, he had some. He made his first disciples during that period, actually. Made means he initiated a few people.
Was he sannyasi then? Or
no, before he took sannyas. And in the presence of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj also. Before he took sannyas, there was no idea of him taking sannyas. No one had any idea. It was unheard of. It was a controversial thing, him taking sannyas. So some people came to him because Mayapur was... There was some publicity about Mayapur, although most people, they went to the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they went to Navadvip, where what was called the birthplace, although there's tremendous evidence that the actual birthplace of appearance place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Mayapur. And even in the 1980s, the Archaeological Survey of India brought out some publication saying that this Mayapur is the actual place from all the evidence they've gathered.
The Mayapur that we know.
Yeah. So he was living, so people would come and apart from chanting 3 lakhs of names every day. 3 lakhs, that means 16 rounds times 4 times 3. 64 rounds times 3. You know when you get your beads, these counting beads? There's 20, right? You know why there are 20? It's 16 plus 4. You divide it into 2, and then you do 16, you pull, and then on the other side you pull down 1. It's meant for 2, 3, 4. That's why there are 20. It's meant for chanting 64 rounds. 16 rounds is a concession.
Is it true that Bhaktisiddhanta said that if you don't chant 64 rounds, you're not a human being?
I didn't hear that, but he said you're fallen. One is considered fallen. But here's another interesting, there's so many that I didn't... So yeah, he had a few disciples. How he was living, well, he was living in a hut. And to even to get to Mayapur in those days, you take a boat over the Ganga or Jalangi, and then you just walk over the fields. There was no road. When they started the mission, even for many years, you'd have to carry in whatever you had to carry on your back or on your head, walking over the rice fields and everything. So, about chanting 64 rounds, one of his disciples, he said to him at the Chaitanya Mart, which is actually a very special and important place. He revealed the importance of that place. So he asked him that. He said, "Well, I see." He told that everyone must chant 64 rounds a day here, otherwise Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will not be satisfied, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can find in Chaitanya Bhagavat, when he was in, I believe it was in South India, he told the, no, that can't be in Chaitanya, but he said that I'll only accept food in the house of a Lokeshwar. Lokeshwar means someone, just like we have in the modern age, Kropati. So Lokeshwar means someone who has 1 lakh. In those days, 1 lakh was a lot of money. So all the people said, we're just poor people, how are we going to serve you? And he said, but I consider a Lokeshwar, one means one who chants 1 lakh of names every day. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the first deity established at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Radha Krishna came later. There's so many stories how the Radha Krishna deities came. So he said that Gaurasunda, he usually referred to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Gaurasunda, he will not be satisfied. And everyone staying here, this is the house of Gaurasunda, so everyone must chant 1 lakh of names a day. He said, but Guru Maharaj, you gave us so many services, we don't have time. He said, no excuse, everyone must chant 1 lakh a day. And at the same time, he gave them, everyone had so much service to do. Mostly no one slept more than 4 hours in 24. More than that was practically unheard of. So then one of his disciples said to him that, well, I don't see anyone else but you chants 1 lakh of... You're chanting, but I don't see anyone else does. And then he said, well, you don't see, but I see. And he was running wrong. He couldn't understand it. That, I see everyone's working and they chant, but they're not. To chant 64 rounds, it's going to take at least 5 hours, it would seem, if you're chanting quite quickly and concentratedly. So then this disciple, Jajabha Maharaj, is one of the sannyasis, he wrote in an article after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur passed away. He wrote that, I couldn't understand this, but later on by his mercy, I got to understand that those who are performing service, that's equivalent to chanting. And actually Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that it's more important for the grihasthas to chant 1 lakh and to chant more than those who are the mutavasis, those who are living in the mut. Because those who are living in the mut are fully engaged all the time. whereas the householders, they have different engagements, so they should chant more. Now, Govinda Maharaj has cheated us all enough for now.
Who is cheating?
I'm sorry, I'm just an offender, as you all know.
If somebody is dispensing Amrita...
Yes, that's why you should speak.
Because I don't get the opportunity to hear nectar like this, so I'm very eager to hear nectar like this. But you didn't answer my question. It's like, he was living there, and he made some disciples.
Means people came to him, they would come... They'd visit Navadvipa and someone would be curious what's over there, and then he would just speak to them and speak and speak and speak, and some people became convinced, and like that they became his disciples.
So was there any specific reason why he gave up his... Did he complete his vow of...
Yeah, it was a vow. It was a vow, and just after he finished that, he took sannyas. And on the same day he established the Chaitanya Math. And that was the beginning of his mission. Well, in some ways his mission began when he came to Calcutta. One of his early disciples was Kunja Bihari, who was from Calcutta. And he brought him to Calcutta. And they established there. And then from there it went on. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave him the service at the Jogpit to stay in Mayapur. And he always, even he traveled, most of the year he wasn't in Mayapur, he would be there at the time of Gaur Purnima, Navadvip Dham Parikrama. Otherwise, most of the year he spent a lot of time in Calcutta and traveling mostly in Bengal and somewhat in Orissa. But as I said, he traveled all over from Kanyakumari to Badrinath and eastern side, way over to what's now Pakistan. But he always felt that I'm at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the Jogpit. This is a service given to me by Bhaktivinoda Thakur to oversee the Jogpit. So he never felt I was anywhere but there.
I've heard some story that Srila Gaur...
This thing you're saying about the advocate... I don't know about that, it may be, but definitely Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the idea of that the movement, that what he had, or the seeds that he had planted, that should be continued and carried on. But the actual instrument in bringing him to the world, you could say, was Kunja Bihari. That's well recognized.
I heard that he was living there.
Kunja Bihari Prabhu.
No, that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was living there and he was doing this japa and virtually eating nothing, and the only time he would come out from his place was to go take a bath in the Ganga, and then he'd go back to his place and continue. And I heard that...
Quite likely, because if you're going to chant so many rounds, then...
Some advocate, maybe it was the Kunja Bihari.
He wasn't an advocate, he was a post office clerk.
Oh, but I heard that somebody went...
But he didn't come for any specific purpose like that. He came as a visit... He was initiated by Akasa Goswami, but he wasn't satisfied with that, and he was looking for what's the real thing. But he had a hard time digesting what Siddhanta Saraswati at that time said, because he was very strong on the Ramakrishna mission, which he was an adherent of. But later, Kunja Bihari, later he became his disciple. He came back later on to see Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj again and arrived on the day that Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj had passed away. Second time he came, Kunja Bihari. Yeah. I'll make a note of that and look into that about an advocate sent by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Yeah. The one thing is, we hear many stories and it's difficult to know if they're true after so many years.
But why we are asking you.
And I can check it. Well, who can be an authority on mythology? Yes. There, an advocate was sent by Bhaktivinoda Thakur to organize
to request to speak to Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur about establishing a mission, but Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said he had no time, and then I heard that eventually he was told by Srila Gaur Kishore Das Baba that he shouldn't waste his time just sitting there and chanting, but he should go out and preach because he was such a learned person.
Regarding this, there was a phase when he was apparently, and again it's like we say he exhibited the pastime of being sick, so he was apparently discouraged about preaching, because he, during this time, he would sometimes go out here and there, people would call him for preaching. He was a well-known person in the Vaishnav world even before he took sannyas. He took sannyas at the age of 44, actually, and then his mission started coming up after that. He was well known. He had addressed a meeting at in Mednipur district on the issue of Brahmins and Vaishnavs. Then again in Navadvip there was a challenge from the smarters on the issue of the Gaur mantra, the mantras for worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Are they eternal or just something made up? So he was well known, but after he visited one meeting, Kashim Bazar Sammilani, and he was practically silenced, or he wasn't allowed to speak, and he was by all the various Prakrita Sahajiyas and Kaska Swamis there, he was feeling somewhat discouraged. And then he came back, and then his Guru Maharaj Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, why waste your time going to these hodgepodge meetings? So he was feeling somewhat, after the passing, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur passed away, then Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj passed away, and he was feeling that he wanted to preach, but he was feeling discouraged also, that how can I do it? But then, because Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj had given him the order to preach the teachings of Shat Shandarbha, of Jiva Goswami Prabhupada, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur had also told him to preach, but he was feeling that Ekaki Ama Nahi Pai Bol Harinama Shankirtana, how can I do? And but he had a few disciples around him, but they could see he was looking kind of discouraged. And he had started writing his commentary on Upadeshamrita, but then he stopped after 8 verses because he was feeling just discouraged. Then one day in the wind, he saw a piece of paper blowing before him, which nowadays there's so many magazines and newspapers printed, that's an ordinary thing. But in Mayapur, which was such a remote place, no one went there to find a piece of paper blowing in the wind. It's quite an unusual thing. So he caught it and looked at it, and it was some writing from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which was also unusual because they didn't have any copies of Chaitanya Charitamrita then. He himself hadn't produced it. And in it, it was just a piece of torn paper, and it had the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami that he should revive the lost, find out and revive the lost holy places and preach bhakti. So he thought they did, and he thought, well, this is the same order that my gurus, he considered Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj as his two gurus. These were the orders that my gurus had given me. So it's like an order being given by them again. And then he had a vision of the 6 Goswamis, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Panchatattva, all telling him, you preach, don't worry, we're here to help you. Because he said, I have to preach, but I've got so much opposition, everyone's against me. And I just have a few young men and no money and nothing. So he got inspiration like that. And then he took sannyas, which was unheard of. So many things.
He took sannyas from a picture?
Yeah. He sat in front of a picture of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj and accepted sannyas, which was and is to this day highly controversial.
Now, when you were speaking about Gaurasundar, you said that he was the first deity.
Mm.
And then you said there was some amazing story about how Gandhara Giridhara came.
Well, it's interesting in as much as, first of all, he chanted 1 billion names before the deity of Gaurasundar. But that deity is not at the place where he chanted. That's just a few kilometers away in one Gauriamat, Rudradweep Gauriamat. It's close to Chaitanya Mat. It's like maybe 3 kilometers, something like that. You go there, there's still no electricity in that place. So you can go and see, and it's very nice. It's very nice if you want to go and sit and chant, and that deity is very, very happy looking. But at Chaitanya Mat, he established deity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And who's been to the Sri Chaitanya Mat in Mayapur? I've been also. So you'll see there now, it's quite a big complex, but at that time it was just a hut. Like the buildings, traditional buildings in Bengal, they're mostly mud huts. So it was like that. But he was thinking that Kunja Bihari took him to Calcutta, and he had some idea that we should establish many deities in many places. So, but they were already worshipping, he'd established the worship of Gandharvika Giridhari. He often referred to Radha Krishna as Gandharvika Giridhari. So you all know what Giridhari means? Gandharvika is the name for Radharani, means she is fully skilled in Gandharva Vidya, which means all the different arts by which she satisfies Krishna. So this is, he liked to call Radha Krishna Gandharvika Giridhari. So he had established the worship in the Chaitanya Mat of Gandharvika Giridhari, and those deities were fashioned from mud and straw, which is very common in Bengal, especially up to now. And now it's just Saraswati Puja. So this season they make deities of Saraswati, and then they go in the river. They're not lasting, they're temporary deities. So such forms of the Lord were being worshipped, but he was thinking we should have nice marble deities, and he wanted to have for all. He had a vision of establishing so many deities in so many temples. But he thought, anyway, this kind of clay form is not the elements, it's not lasting. So he thought, but wait, I want to have deities just like this, looking just like this. So he went to Jaipur and he found deities just like that. But they were already sold to one Marwari businessman. But then that Marwari businessman was instructed in a dream that you give to Siddhant Saraswati. So he went back to the shop, they were still in the shop, and he got his deposit returned, and Saraswati Thakur took the deities, and he took more than 60 sets of deities, probably the biggest order ever in history to this day, and gradually installed them in different mats. Some of them became apparently damaged. They're in the Radha Kund at Chaitanya Mat. Radha Kund is there, so he placed them in those that became damaged, he placed them in Radha Kund. There's so many wonderful things, we don't even know them all. Sometimes at night, he would be up in the night and going out, and someone would say, where is he going? And in the middle of the night, don't you see the Gornitai, all the, they're going and dancing and singing, you don't see them? No one would see, he would see, and the other who would see was Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj, his first sannyasi. But others wouldn't see. Sometimes he, even when Saraswati Thakur wasn't there, he would get up in there and say, "Come on, let's go." He said, "What, you know, what's going on? What? Come on, let's. Don't you see? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing. Let's go and join them." No one would see. Only he would see. He's a very elevated personalities in his pastimes. Some very wonderful persons.
Did he give any specific instructions about public performance of Harinam?
Public performance in what sense? You mean?
Like kirtan in public.
Well, regularly they would go for Harinam in Calcutta and different cities. They would go. In Chennai, they were greeted, they had a civic reception. They went with the brass band on Harinam. In the in their regular kirtans, they'd use mridanga and kartels principally, and also this jaja. Wampas we call. What do you call in Hindi? I don't think they use it in Hindustani kirtan. It's very much part of Bengali kirtan. And the kasi, dung dung dung, gong, and the ganta, which during the arati, they would ding, 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 all the way through. So these were the instruments. And at festivals, they would sometimes use Rama Singha, which is something like a saxophone, shenai, something like that. And at festivals or in big public kirtans, they'd sometimes use this round drum and beating like this. What's it called? Dhak. In Bengali it's called dhak. Actually I should write that down because I didn't get the name. Dhak. Yeah. I have to be careful. If I go on, someone will write it all down and publish the book before me.
Maharaj has been working for so many years on this book, just collecting information. And he mentioned before we came in here that the book now has turned into two books, and each volume is over 700 pages on the life of the great Acharya Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
With many photos also that haven't been published for many years. I just saw a photo that it's probably never been published, just two, three days ago. It's someone's worshipping in their home. But they said they don't want to give it to me for reproduction. They said maybe they have a negative somewhere, they'll try and find it. Because that the photo they have is a reproduction of an older one. Those people, they were in the line of Bipin Bihari Goswami. Oh, that's another thing. Which makes it... They were followers of Bipin Bihari Goswami. When Bipin Bihari... That means their fourth, their grandfather. When Bipin Bihari Goswami passed away, one of his disciples sent others who were coming around to him to Siddhanta Saraswati for initiation. So if he was so much against Bipin Bihari, I don't think he would have done that. So probably if you travel around, you can still find, you know, maybe many people here and there with so many things. There are still so his disciples, and still all over who have got different things to say. Maybe there are different photos and some of his shoes and different things. There are so many things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he used to go daily in a palanquin from Choti to Kendrapara. He was carried daily. But then some of his descendants, they thought, what's the use of keeping this, and just chopped it up for firewood. People don't know the value.
Could you just tell us...
Wait a minute, there's a boss here. He's our local GBC.
Last question. I heard this story, and I've heard it a lot of different ways, so you can clarify it.
Maybe not, because I also hear many different stories, and it's very difficult to know what is actually true, if they're true at all.
But you heard so many stories, you must have distilled something from it, which is why... straight. About him going to Radha Kund, and I heard that he went there in some big fancy limousine. Did you hear that one?
Well, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj told that, right?
I don't know. I don't know where the story's from.
Yeah, he told that. I don't know if he specifically went to Radha Kund, but he went to the Vraja area, probably in a Jaguar sedan, which
Jaguar.
Was. But in those days, any car was a fancy car. I guess there were Fords also, even in those days. And Fords, they must have started by then. So it was like unheard of. Sadhus don't go in any kind of car. Only in India, who went was big British officials and Maharajas. It means kings. And there were no proper roads, practically. I mean, there weren't even proper roads in India when we first came, what to speak of in the 1930s. I remember those roads in the 1970s? That's you wonder why our sannyasis are all sick. That's bumping around. The main roads, like Calcutta to Bombay, Calcutta to Guwahati, they were like far worse than some village road nowadays in India, like the road in Mayapur. And really, I mean, incredibly, extraordinarily bad. It looks.
That means bad.
I remember we were driving up with Ananda Sarup once to Guwahati, and the whole road looked like the Japanese had bombed it, and no one had filled it in since.
When I first went to Vrindavan, the Delhi Highway was like that.
And that was the road they kept the best in India, because that was the Agra tourist road. It was you couldn't go more than about 10 or 15 kilometers an hour without causing more serious damage to your constitution than was already being had by all the different... And the vehicles... Hare Krishna.
There was a combination, roads, dysentery, and ambassador cars.
Well, you're an ambassador. I was in a Matador vehicle. And to get in and to get out, you had to wind down the only window that opened and fiddle around with the handle outside because you couldn't work. The one inside didn't work. And that was, to have a vehicle at all, that was something like really prestigious. And phone calls. I mean, I know two devotees who literally, they almost had nervous breakdowns just from trying to make phone calls. You book it, if you want to make an STD call, forget international, you book it in the morning, and then you call that back the operator, and after trying 50 times, you get the operator, and you're trying to say they can't hear you can't hear them, and then they just put the phone down. Then you have to try another 50 times, and then it goes on all day, and at midnight they cancel it, and you have to start all over again. And you got the local GBC telling you you have to make this phone call, it's urgent, and otherwise we wouldn't dream of trying to make a phone call. And in Calcutta, even to make a local call, it was usually better just to go to the place. It would be quicker and better. Spend 2 hours going. There are many funny stories. At that time, we didn't think it was very funny. I first saw Ayodhyapati Prabhu. You ever heard the name Vayodhyapati Prabhu? I first saw I was just seeing the difference between the way he dresses and the way I dress. But the first time I saw him, he was a grihastha dressed in black. So you might think he was one of these ayappas or something. He was the cook in Krishna Balaram Mandir. And it was cooking on wood. So that's how it was. Not only the cloth was black, but everything about it was black.
Very black. And still, the heart is black.
Black and blissful. In those days also, it was famous for cooking and kirtan.